I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is your official spoiler warning. If you have not seen The Power episode 4, The Day of the Girls, then and you don't want it ruined for you, and you don't actually, so this is a real one, you can only listen to the first bit of this podcast until we do the blurb. This has been your official spoiler warning, but please enjoy this episode.
Peace. I hate the word.
Hello and welcome back to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama. It's a podcast where each week myself and my friend Zach get together and we chat about Johnny Legs and everything he's done, including this brilliant Amazon Prime television series, The Power, which we love. Spoiler, we enjoy this show.
We do. We're loving it.
I really am. My name is Mish Wittrup. You might know me as being the second daughter of Elizabeth Wittrup.
Oh.
Can I dox my mum like that?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, actually, there's not a lot of Wittrups, so if someone wanted to find my mum now, they could.
Yeah. There's a lot of... I love this thing about Nepo babies where they say... I think the Nepo baby thing is weird and ill-pointed anger. Mm. It's not silly. Where you need to...
100%.
I get that you're angry at the symptom, not the cause.
Are you calling me a Nepo baby?
No. It reminded me when you were talking about doxing your mum, it reminded me that the funniest insult to people is like... that I've seen on Twitter is like, why are your parents blue on Wikipedia?
I'm joined as always by my friend whose parents are famous, Zach Ruane.
I am the son of a travel writer and author, Stan Ruane, and actress and theatre director Joe Ruane. Librarian and a natural gas power station employee, both former, now retired.
It's so funny that you bring up Nepo babies because I was on TikTok this morning and I came across a Lily Allen video.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
And she was asked...
there's like a lot of Lily Allen videos.
How does it feel to be a Nepo baby? And she was like answering that question. It is like... People just, I don't know why all of a sudden it's making people so mad. Like, you can't help what you're born
into.
That's
my thing is it's like, yeah, it's a problem, these like systems of, but like you're focusing on one thing, you're focusing on the performer ones, but what about like the banker Nepo babies or the Murdochs?
Oh, I, for a very, very small period of time in my life, knew this guy that was essentially kind of like a socialite. That was his job. He was friends with a very good friend of mine. And I went to a couple of birthdays of his, like his 25th or something like that. So this is a while ago. And he was friends with just obscenely rich early to mid-20-year-old women. And they were all the heirs of massive companies.
Yeah.
And it's like... They were really nice. Like, and I would be too if I was that rich. I would be so lovely to people if I was obscenely rich. But it was just such a different – and I mean like it's funny because when I was younger I used to be like, oh, my God, I'm so poor, like in comparison to all my private school friends. Of course I wasn't, but being exposed to that level of like obscene wealth.
It is one of those things I think that – there's this double thing, right? People in the middle class don't know how poor someone can be.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were surrounded by a lot of people that are like, oh, it's so hard and I'm poor. And it's like, you have to count your savings when you say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, but also you have to count your network, your family, anyone that could support you at any point. That kind of counts.
Yeah.
You know, maybe right now, but there are people that are genuinely struggling. You know, this is the point I'm saying, but there's a lot of people that don't know how poor a person can be in our country.
Uh-huh.
But then also there's a lot of people that just don't know how rich a person could be. I think there's this thing where like it's like almost this problem on like, you know, like people, there's like this group of people that are like, oh, you know, the left want to take my money. It's like, no. Like some on the left do, but like a lot of them are talking about like a level of wealth you can't comprehend.
Yeah.
Like I heard this story. This is not funny at all. But when we stopped being funny about 4 months ago.
Yeah, I know.
I read this story.
Every episode for the last 4 months, we've been like, hey, man, that's just our vibe today. That's okay. We're not cracking jokes today. And
this
that's
is our
fine.
Slow descent to Joe Rogan. I read this thing about how, maybe I've said this on the podcast, but the CEO or like a really high up guy at Google, right? Have I told you this?
No.
He's a really high up guy at Google.
And he's my dad.
He's my dad. this really.
I've met your dad, and if he was really high up at Google, he's like very modest about it.
My mum gets really bad. My parents are just like very like middle class, right? Like middle class boomers. They've done well out of being boomers, right?
But that's the same as mine.
You know,
yeah.
But they're not. They're not. Whatever, they're normal. but it's so funny. When you say middle class, that means nothing. Because, man, how many fucking rich cunts have you known in your life that are like, we're middle class? It's like, you're not.
You're not middle class.
You're not middle class because there's like a big circle around the southeast of Melbourne that you live in.
Yeah.
And no one there is actually middle class. You're middle class by like British standards, yeah. But not by... Anyway, my mum always like is like funny about like fancy restaurants, right? She's always like, oh, they're always so like wanky and everything. And like, they're never wanky to me. And I have a theory that they guess that my parents are richer and hoity-toitier than they are.
Yep. Okay.
Like they have like, my mum hates wanky service, but I think.
Yep.
That they think.
Yep.
That dad owns a company.
He could give off that vibe.
There's this assumption that I think they make that dad owns a trucking company. Like it's like he worked his way up to the top.
Yep.
But that dad owns like a trucking company. It's not as big as Lynn Fox, but he definitely has a few trucks in his fleet.
Yep.
And mum hasn't worked for 40 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they go, that's the assumption I'm going to make on that. Couple
based purely off visual, I can see why
that's my theory.
There.
You know, that's my theory.
Whereas I reckon my mum to look at looks like wealthy, she wears very,
yes,
she loves,
yeah. Your mum has that look, yeah,
she's,
yeah.
But she's a fucking nurse, like, do you know? But yeah, she, yeah. But she loves that, like, she loves hoity toity service,
yeah, yeah.
She literally works now to do those things, like, yeah. Like, she loves fancy restaurants and she wears country. Like when my mum gardens, she wears a Gorman smock. Like it's ridiculous. And she is a nurse. But the way
Gorman
I look at it.
Smock,
yeah,
really?
Like she gardens in clogs and like her like rough around the house is country road.
I love Gorman.
Same. I don't give a shit. If people are shitting on Gorman, it's become a thing.
Has it?
There's this running theme. A very funny comedian said to me that Gorman is the uniform of 35-year-old comedians. And it's very true.
That's funny.
It's really true.
That's funny.
Because the thing I'm wearing for my show is Gorman, and she pulled me up on it, and it was just very, very funny.
I reckon, is there anything that would fit me at a Gorman? They're all like
they
quite feminine cut, though.
But they fit me, and I'm a sphere. No,
it's not what I meant. It's more the cut on my body. Not that I have any issue with wearing feminine clothes. It's
oh, they've
more
got
just
heaps,
cut.
Mate. Yeah. We'll find you something.
Like I went to I was looking for a particular kind of jacket for the Dungeons and Dragons premiere. Yeah. And I had this really distinct vision in my mind because I had these sort of really high like matrixy boots that I just bought, and I had this vision of like a long coat, but I didn't want it to look like a matrixy coat. I wanted it to look a little more classical to sort of counter the boots. What I really wanted was a Burberry coat.
Yep. Right? Okay.
But I can't afford a Burberry coat because they're like.
But your dad is so high up at Google. No, just ask him, man.
Can't dad sell one of his trucks? And then he explained to me it doesn't work like that. They don't actually own the trucks. They lease them. Yeah. That's the thing. That's a favorite thing rich people have to say. It's actually, I'm not liquid. but they, I really wanted this coat, but like I couldn't find it, you know, under $1,000. You know what I mean? Like what I had in my head was a $5,000 coat, right? And most things you can get cheap, but that's one of those things where it's actually kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
And I kind of ended up having to just give up on that notion. But before I gave up, I was in the men's section at Myer. I went down to the women's section at Myer. And it was this really funny thing where I was like literally just looking for a nice coat that would fit me. And there was, and I quite like how women's coats come in at the, a good tailored men's coat comes in at the waist.
Yeah.
But like a more, a cheaper women's coat does the same thing. I was like looking for that. And I was like, it's going to be hard to find one in my size. But like most people were cool. Like I went to one place and she was like, yeah, tried it on. And it was a bit, and I went to Coz and the lady was like, couldn't comprehend. But wasn't like, you know, like, about it. Like, wasn't that like cliche idea? Couldn't comprehend that I wanted a woman's item of clothing just because I thought it would look nice, not because I was like fabulous and Sam Smith. Like, she was like, that looks great. I'm like, it doesn't. It wouldn't even, like it doesn't. And it wouldn't look good if I was trying to do that either. But the way she was trying to sell it to me,
oh, bless.
Was like this, like, oh, wow, yeah, that's going to be awesome. You can put that in. And I was like, I'm here. I'm clearly chill around gender. I'm here, but I'm not doing this to be provocative. I just want a nice coat. And I don't mind if it looks like a woman's coat. I don't really think, you know, it's all a construct, blah, blah, blah.
That's but she so
was
so, funny.
It was so funny. She was just like, yes, it's amazing, da, da, da. I was like, I just want a nice trench coat, for God's sake.
I have to say, like, I had to go, I did something for Comedy Festival where I had to buy a man's shirt,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't shop for my partner or anything. He does all his own stuff. Like, I'm not, of course, I don't shop.
No, there's people do.
There's no one in my life, like, that I need to buy clothes for, right, except myself. And I've never really had to go and buy men's clothing, but I had to go and buy this man's shirt. And fuck, man, like, we have so many more options than you do.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's section, outrageous.
It's crazy. I went to Myer because I was like, surely I'll find one at Myer. And it was like there's three stories of women's clothing and then half a story for men's, and it looks awful. And the people working there are obviously they've all gotten like one warning. They've all done something and been given a warning and sent down
to the
menswear
section.
And it was just like, and they're all fucking ugly.
No, there's a lot of really ugly stuff. It's really limited range, really limited sizing, like even worse than women's sizing range. And women's is bad.
I've got to say though, like, and I haven't actually, I need to write this down one day because I know that every other fat person has like, honestly, it goes on this rant, but it's so embarrassing how the difference between in big department stores, women's clothing and then the plus size section.
Yeah.
It's really embarrassing for them. Like, are you like honestly, I encourage anyone of any size, just go and have a look because that's what we have to work with. It's
but at least
fucked.
They stopped calling the brands Johnny Fatso in the 90s.
Oh my God, yeah.
All the men's brands like big old big boy loves bowling and is a fatty man.
Did you see? I hate repeating jokes from comedians. But did you see Greg Larson's bit?
I heard that he's done a bit about it. I gotta go look
it up. It's so funny. Do you want me to,
No, I'll go look it
everyone
up.
Everyone, go look up Greg Larson's bit on shopping for clothing. It is so funny.
I'll check it
funny.
Out. It's on Instagram, yeah? Yeah. I think someone sent it to me, but I haven't seen it yet.
Here's the most recent conspiracy. It's not really a conspiracy theory, it's actually fact. I sound like a conspiracy theorist when I say that, but it is. A lot of women's brands have now started stocking up to a size 20, right? So in the past, it was always to a 14 and some brands went to a 16.
Yeah, right.
Now, the average woman in Australia is a size 14.
That's wild.
Wild, right? So for someone like me, who is a size 20 to 22, depending on the brand, all my shopping was done online. All of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
but then that's the worst thing, because it's like fit is so much more important.
Yeah.
And I hate shopping online. I hate shopping online because it's like, how does this look on my body?
Don't even get me started.
You know, anyway.
So all these brands now, really popular brands, like I think I can name some. Fuck it, I'll name some. Portmans, for example.
Yeah.
Country Road. Gorman Sports Girl, those kind of things, right? They're now stocking up to a size 20.
Yeah, right.
Gorman's excluded. They stock to a 20 in store. But all these Suzanne's, all these stores that are now saying, we stock up to a size 20, they don't do it in store.
Yeah.
They only do it online. It's really fucking weird. And a place like Sports Girl, they go up to a double XL now, which is an 18 to 20, I think. But they only get one of each item in store in a double XL and they're always sold out. I wonder why.
Yeah.
But you can't find plus sizes in stores at all. It's really strange. I'm not suggesting that they don't want fat people in their store, but it feels that way. Because why else? Why? Like, oh, they're look, selling.
I'm going to say, like, oh, no, I'm going to sound like a real fuck. Like, I think there's definitely an, like, I think the biggest problem with brick and mortar clothes, I would never get into a brick and mortar clothing business because it's like stocking is, like, so hard.
So hard.
And also, this is the bigger thing. I think, like, off-the-rack clothing is a bit of a fucking scam.
Mm.
Like, everybody is so different. Not everybody. Everybody is so different. Mm. Everybody is so different. I genuinely think we could do with a bit of a return to tailoring and a bit of a return to just like, I don't know, like it's a bit weird that they try to make clothes like we'll just make this item of clothing and then like make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and not like adjust its cut or anything. Because there's so many different body types. It's getting harder and harder and harder to like make sense of.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a bit funny.
And as soon as you put on any form, like I'm obviously quite big, but like as soon as you put on any form of weight, the distribution of that weight is different for everybody.
Yeah, and then like sizes just go up. They don't change.
I carry, personally, a hell of a lot of weight around my tum and hips, right?
Yeah, right.
Much more so than
I do. We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, by the way.
Oh, I brought it up.
Anyway, go on.
I don't care. We can stop if this is boring. I'm just ranting at my friend now.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember when this was a comedy podcast?
Yeah.
Anyway, all I'm saying is that my weight distribution is predominantly around my middle. I'm big all over, but my legs are much smaller in comparison. It's impossible to find jeans.
Impossible. Jeans go up to that's totally
impossible.
Makes sense.
We can stop talking about this if you'd like.
No, I don't care. But I'll tell you what I do want to talk about. I just didn't want you to feel like we were in the corner of that conversation.
No, I don't care. I talk very openly about it now.
Yeah.
I could not give a fuck.
I want to talk about one thing. I have a proposal that I thought
I do
could be fun. Oh. I was wondering, right? If we should start doing the spoiler warning before we talk about the episode.
Why?
Because, and this is just something to think about, like just to talk about fun on the podcast, but then we can actually think about it for real. Because we don't talk about the episode for the first like 15, 20 minutes of the episode. And like we do this spoiler warning. We're like, oh, don't listen if you haven't watched it. And then we don't talk about it for 20 minutes. So just something to think about.
I'll think about it.
That maybe we could do something else at the top, something fun. Like this is your Leguizamo warning if you get too hot and heavy thinking about the greatest character actor in the world.
Take a break, have a Maz, come on back.
Oh, God. my God. And then talk and then do the spoiler warning. So we're not like telling people to switch off before we talk about fucking one pot pasta for 20 minutes.
I'll think about it, but I hate change. So
yeah, I know you do. That's
that
why
made me panic a little bit.
I thought it would be a funny thing to talk about on pod. And then we could have a real meeting about it where you process it.
Yeah, okay. My immediate answer was like, no, please.
No, it's different.
Yeah, I don't like it. It's change. makes me panic. I don't like that idea. But I like opening the episode with something.
Yeah, I thought we could do something fun. It's just a fun thought I had. Well, no, it's a real thought I had was like, we're probably telling people to switch off when they could get 20 minutes of one pot pasta gold.
We could get different listeners of the podcast to send us voice recordings just saying their name and their favourite John Leguizamo film.
See, that's cute.
I like
so
that.
So much admin, though. And
oh, God. Yeah, I don't want to do
that. We've been struggling with the basics of podcasts.
Yeah, I can't even fucking post on Instagram. I would like to say, for what it's worth, I've been in the middle of Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Zach has been flying all over the bloody shop. And his bloody TV show came out or whatever. I'm in charge of the Instagram. It's not Zach. And I know that there's been a slight delay on a couple of things and that would be my fault. And I'm sorry. I have been fucking mushy. I'm so tired. That's all I have to say about that. I'm sorry.
Oh, you don't have to apologize.
No, I do. People get pissy.
Yeah, they probably like plan their week around on this morning. I'm going to listen to this podcast. Mm. I don't.
You don't?
But maybe there are people that do that.
But
I don't think that, you know, you don't need to apologize.
Blurb?
Are
you doing the blurb? Are you texting?
I just thought of one thing to add.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough. Well, why don't we just do an ad break while you do that then?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, welcome back. Now we'll be talking about I'll do my blurb now.
Yeah, cool.
That was good. That was a good spot to put the ad.
Thanks.
This week, we watched episode 4 of The Power on Amazon Prime. This week's episode was titled The Day of the Girls and was about three of the characters. Tunde, the Nigerian journalist, went to Saudi Arabia to film and witness an Arab Spring-style uprising of women with the power. Roxy, the British gangster girl who Mish loves, seeks revenge on the men that killed her mother and potentially ignites a cycle of violence outside of her control.
Mm.
Meanwhile, Ali, the one from the first episode with the voice of God in her head who lives with nuns now, starts to discover the full extent of their newfound power. It had a Grimes song and a Velvet Underground cover, which was really cool.
Mm.
John Leguizamo was not in this episode.
Okay. Technically, he was.
Okay, cool.
Because at the top of the episode, they did a previously on.
Yeah.
And he was in there, which is why we're doing an episode about this. Otherwise, we would have left it out because he's not in it. But he was technically.
Do you know what? I was just like cool with that's a great excuse too. I was happy to just sort of say, you know, we're sucked into the power and it feels whole. It feels like a whole piece. So even if he's not in this episode, it would feel weird to not talk about it.
Because when we did ER, we would watch like episode 10, 11, 12, and then 17.
But ER's fine, you know. ER's like the bulk of ER is like, maybe it's not cancer. Maybe it's
syphilis.
Yeah, maybe it's syphilis. What are you talking about? No one's had syphilis since 1722. Wow, it is syphilis. The end.
Give me a kiss.
Yeah. Oh, do you want a kiss? No, I don't want to kiss anymore. The end.
Oh, that's so accurate.
That's great.
Fuck, man, this episode was real powerful, eh?
Yeah, it was.
It was just a lot. I find it really interesting with this series how every episode is so different, and I don't mean that in a dumb fuck way. Yeah. I mean, like, we finished episode 3 with Mayor Margot Toni Collette doing her big speech. And I was like, oh my God, the next episode we're going to be looking into that. Didn't even come up.
The structural choice, and I wonder if it comes from the book, but the structural choice to leave characters for entire episodes and then like loop back around to them at the next episode.
Brave, man.
Is brave.
Because you're assuming that people are going to get invested in this.
Yeah.
That was a grandiose assumption to make. Bloody nail on the head. But it was. Like, that's ballsy as.
Like, I find it really interesting structurally to be like, we're not going to touch Margot. We're not going to touch this. Like, they introduced this this wife of the...
Tatiana.
And then they just left her for a full episode. Mm. My question is, do they have a pattern? Is it like, it's not...
Well, it seems like there's always an episode that's kind of dedicated to the American and British people. The people who are in America and the people
I was going to say, is there an American and a Eastern European? But I don't think it is, because the British girl intercut with...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is a pattern. I think they're just kind of... because there's so many characters, they're just not trying to touch all of them every episode.
There are very, very small crossover points happening. So I'm wondering if they are all going to come together at some point. I don't think so, actually. I have a feeling that how are they all going to come together? But
I think they might intersect.
Yeah.
I think we might. You seen Babel?
Yes. Is that Cate Blanchett?
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't seen it for a very long neither. Time. But that was an attempt at a really global story where different people, like different experiences all over the world intersect.
Mm. Have you seen Love Actually?
Funnily enough, you could argue that Babel and Love Actually are in the same genre.
Yeah, maybe.
There's
also another one called Sidewalks of New York. Have you ever seen that?
No, but there's a million of them.
No, but just very, very quickly, side note, because I haven't thought about that movie until just now.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's got like the best cast.
What is it?
It's much like Babel, Love Actually, all these little stories all happening around New York, but they all kind of sort of... It's got Stanley Tucci, Brittany Murphy, Rosario Dawson. Like, the cast of Sidewalks of New York is, like, phenomenal. I want to say Paul Rudd is in it, maybe?
Oh, that's fun.
Maybe?
Do you know the one difference? I think there's two, slightly different genres, right?
Mm.
They're slightly different. Right. There's like the vignettes.
Mm.
There's like the lots of short stories intercut and that touch each other at points. Almost the Pulp Fiction structure.
Mm.
In a way, Love Actually is almost closer to a Pulp Fiction than it is to like a Babel or a 21 Grams, where the stories are intrinsically linked, although separate.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you're saying.
Like, there's a bit, like, Love Actually is almost like lots of little short stories.
Yes.
That sort of touch
yes.
at points. Whereas Babel is about how they interact. But what I was trying to say is, like, Babel, I haven't watched it in a long time. I'd love to rewatch it. But I always felt like that film didn't quite come together as a whole the way I had hoped it would. And this, I think, it makes me go, if you want to go global, if you want to go really, like, how does someone's life in Africa affect someone's life in America, affect someone's life in Eastern Europe, you can't, like, TV is a much better medium for that, because you've got more time to let the stories very slowly kind of seep together.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I think this would have been a movie 20 years ago, and actually I think is better for being a series.
100%. I couldn't. 100%.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I don't know exactly what it is that they're doing, but it's working for me.
Yeah. No. And I don't like. This is the episode where I went for the first three. I was like, where is this going? What's this doing? Do I love it? Like, I liked it, but there were like question marks there of like what. This was the episode where I was like, okay, now I'm like. Now I'm cool.
100%, yep.
Okay. Like, now I trust them.
Yes.
And it can now go, like, for the first three, I was like, I am holding my judgment until I see where they're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, they can take it wherever they want. I trust them. I see that they're doing something interesting. They can go wherever they want with it.
Yeah.
I'm not like...
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. Because it was a good ep.
Oh, my God. It was a really powerful ep.
Yeah.
Like, very, very powerful episode of television.
Really good exploration of, I wasn't going to go too deep, but like of intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
Like in a really real and interesting sense that like, just this power, the way it manifests in different cultures and in different power structures is different. It creates different sort of things and everyone's experience is different. And it's like, I just think it's a really like, it's in the subtext that this has got some really cool stuff going on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How amazing was the scene where that young guy like shot his gun up into the air
in the Saudi Arabian
mm-hmm.
thing, yeah,
and everyone dropped to the ground except his mother.
So yeah, so just for people to know, I think I sort of said it with the Arab Spring thing. There was like an uprising. There was like a woman was beaten. Like in Saudi Arabia, in the story, they make the power illegal. And then there was like an uprising because a young girl was beaten for using it. And then there was like a sort of a women marching through the street. And
just collecting other women to join them. And the reporter was there.
Yeah. And this guy shot at the crowd. And then
it was like these men would be coming up and trying to like, you know, beat them. And then another woman would come up and shock them so they'd fall to the ground. It was just incredible. It's a really incredible scene.
And the power, I think, the power, that's the name of the show. The power of the mother to sort of go like, I'm your mother.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Mm-hmm. That it's like, it's about.
She said to her, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It was just it was incredible. She didn't say it like that. Like, what are you doing? It was a really powerful scene, like beautifully shot. Like I just am really into this show. The soundtrack of this show
is really cool.
It's phenomenal. It might be one of the best I've ever heard in a television series.
Yeah, because it's not the obvious choices. It's like, you know, like I think sometimes with a show like this, if they're doing like jukebox, like they do a few needle drops, particularly at the end of episodes, but sometimes the needle drop is a piece from the score, and then other times it's really interesting choices of music. Like it's always like an interesting, like yeah, this one was a cover of a Velvet Underground song, which is like very much closer to the realm of like an obvious choice, but it's an interesting choice within that.
Yeah,
like realm.
Yeah,
yeah, really cool. British, you know, it's got a bit of Britishness to it all.
It really does. They do the whole Roxy storyline to me. It's obviously very British, but it's just done in that very British way.
It's even like the American one is the one at points that I struggle with the most because it's so British. Mm. like it's weird to hear Americans.
Yeah. Even the, yeah. Roxy, I'm really into Roxy.
Yeah, Roxy.
I know
cool.
I've said that previously. There's something about the person who's playing Roxy that I really like.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I think they are so phenomenal at this character.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know how...
It's like Skins.
Yeah, it is like Skins.
Skins always had the truth. I tried to watch Euphoria recently, and part of it is because I'm older, but there is a part of it where they're like, they're too sexy.
Do you think that we would have liked Euphoria when we were in our early 20s? Yeah, do you think we would have watched it? Because we watched Skins together.
100% we would have watched Euphoria. And look, I'm open to Euphoria, but it's like... they're all so sexy.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. You have to be able to believe that Cook in Skins is the hottest thing in the world and that everyone wants to fuck him.
Because that's what being
a teenager is.
Yeah.
If you think back about the people that like, well, if I think back anyway, about like all the popular boys in high school.
Yeah.
When you think about, all they had was a full head of hair and blue eyes. Do you know what I mean?
They don't even have that where I'm from. They just played football.
Yeah, or that.
They literally just played football.
Whereas, like, and the thing about Skins is, I mean, Effie was probably a bit of a long shot, but the thing about Skins is that they all looked like teenagers. Yeah,
Effie looked like a teenager. There was, there's one of them.
Yeah, that's true. There is one of them.
But, like, Euphoria is 30,
Zendaya's.
25-year-old Effies.
Yeah. Just 30 Zendayas.
30 Zendayas. Just the hottest 20-year-olds imaginable. And
if there was ever a documentary made about the making of Euphoria, they should call it 30 Zendayas. 30 Zendayas.
Oh, man.
No, I couldn't get into Euphoria. I think it is because I'm too old. It's not for me. You know what I mean? They didn't make that for me.
I will give it a go at some point, but then, like, I think there's a bit of, like, I don't know. I am perfectly fine with shocking material, but I think as I get older, I'm perfectly fine with shocking material.
Mm.
To the point that if its main goal is to shock me,
yeah,
I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's full on. That's how
I feel about gory horror.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, okay. Like, it just doesn't, I need a build up. You can't, I've seen Alien now. I've seen the little creature come out of his tum.
Yeah.
Very full on. That was a very shocking full on thing for me to see when I was younger. What do you mean when I was younger? I watched it like for the first time a few months ago. Anyway, my point is, gore and stuff doesn't bother me anymore. And if there's a lot of gore, purely for the shock value of it.
It's not shocking enough to shock you.
Nah.
Like, I find gore, like, I think there needs to be nuance. Is this gore funny? Is it beautiful? Is it full on? Mm-hmm. Is it violent? Does it hurt? Does it, you know, like, there's different kinds of, yeah, totally.
Mm.
But no, I think, like, I think she's got that realness.
Effie?
No, going back to the power.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, no, I really like Roxy. I thought that storyline was really interesting.
Yeah.
I'm that scene, it's just so well acted, cast it perfectly, this show.
Mm.
It does, however, genuinely kind of feel like two different shows in a lot of ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in terms of
all the different stories.
Yeah, like just, four or five different
like the
shows.
Way that the Roxy story is handled in comparison to the way John Leguizamo, Toni Collette and Moana's story, it feels different. Like, they're shot differently. They feel different.
No, you're not wrong. It's very, like, I quite like how different it all is. Mm. But, yeah, in time, how they intersect will, I think, play into, as much as I just said the opposite of this, will play into, like, what I think of the whole thing in the end.
Yeah.
But I quite like that. It feels like a collage. It 100%. Feels different and like everything has a different energy. It almost has like an Avengers vibe. Mm. Like, not in the, but in the sense that when that was at its best, every film felt different and then it was fun to see them intersect.
Kind of mesh together.
You know? I'm trying to think. Yeah, like, it's interesting. It's
like Taylor Swift's albums. They're all quite different. But if you take them all and you mesh them all together, it's one cohesive structure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Apparently, so I've been told. You know, Taylor Swift's fans are some of the most hardcore people you will ever meet in your entire life.
She sicks them on people too.
Does she?
You know.
Does she?
Oh, I shouldn't say this. She does, though. Sometimes she'll just be like,
go get them.
She a little bit. She'll just be like,
really?
Oh, this thing that this person said upset me. And rightfully so. But there's a bit of sicking. I've got to be careful when I say that.
No, they're just like her fans, I reckon, arguably, is the most hardcore fandom on the planet.
Maybe BTS beats her.
Okay, maybe BTS. But like Taylor Swift fans.
Yeah, they're hardcore.
Are hardcore. You can't just like her music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You either have to be completely like indifferent or obsessed with her. I feel like really conflicted because I like a couple of her songs.
Yeah, I quite like Taylor Swift. Yeah.
Yeah, she's fine, but I can't just think she's fine. You know what I mean? And if people are like, but what about this album? If you look into this, this is the secret Easter eggs and the messaging behind. I just like the song Coney Island. Like,
what are the secret Easter eggs?
But I don't know. But there's her fandom take her interviews that she does,
yeah.
And like absolutely dissects them to every second of what she's trying to tell her audience. And it's like, I don't think she's I think she knows. Yeah, there's no.
I think occasionally she'll drop a hint here and there, but you'll know when it is a hint.
People, she named her most recent album Midnights, right?
Yeah.
It's a fine album. There's like one or two songs I like, but whatever.
It's good. Yeah, I think it's like I like the production and I like the songwriting.
Yeah, it's fine.
And I like
it's
some
fine.
Of the songs. Yeah.
It's fine. But people, like after she released the name of her album, people went back to interviews she did 3 months earlier where she was wearing a ring that was a midnight blue color. And they were like, that's an Easter egg. That's psycho. That is psycho what you just did. She didn't do that. She did not put on a ring going, I reckon they're going to read into this. Like, that's mental.
Yeah.
Like, no offense if you're one of those, like, hardcore Taylor Swift fans. And if you're going to be
I think there's a huge crossover.
There could be. Honestly, they're everywhere. Like, then they're really full on.
Yeah,
like,
no, it's full on. That's, I think, what I meant by the sick and on thing, is that she knows how full on they are.
Yeah.
And there are times where she's maybe, I don't know, it would be hard. It's like it's not her responsibility, but also it is.
But just imagine being in her position. That would be very, very
full on.
I mean, she's been doing this since she was like 13 or something like that, so she doesn't know any different. But like, I can't imagine if you had like people who studied your life, like her relationships. They like look into every song being about
a particular
boyfriend.
Well, do you know
they heard,
like they figured out, like she just wrote a song called Style. And they figured out that Style was about Harry Styles. I don't know how they figured that out. But they, through the subtle hint, I don't even think she was just writing a song about an ex-lover after she broke up with Harry Styles.
I've got to say, though, one of my favourite things that you've ever said, and it wasn't that long ago, so I don't know why I'm repeating stuff you've said on the podcast, like
whatever,
less than a few months ago, was that the thing you don't like about, like, that we both like Taylor. I feel like we both feel the same way about Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I feel.
There are songs we like and whatever. Yeah. But you said that like, oh, because I was saying how I love All Too Well, the 10-minute version. The first time I heard that, I was like, that's a fucking sick song. And you're like, it's not my favorite because she tells you exactly everything. There's nothing open to interpretation. And that your favorite line in a Taylor Swift song is sometimes I feel like a sexy baby and you're just a monster on the hill or something like that, because it's the most open. And that was the lyric that's thrown all of her fans like, okay, we don't like that one. That one's not good. The sexy baby one is not good.
No, I totally. But that's not necessarily my opinion. That's Annie, my partner's opinion. My opinion is, no, I agree though.
Yeah.
I like lyrics that are a little more open.
Yeah.
But I think as well, I mean, she's a folk country musician at her core. That's the sort of music she writes. And when you look at that tradition, when you look at, you know, I'm not a big country guy, but Johnny Cash I really like, and Bob Dylan and those figures and Jolene, I'm having a mental blank.
Dolly Parton.
They tell stories. They're storytellers. And I think it's sometimes just with the pop production, it's strange to have this storytelling kind of style of music sitting inside something that usually has much more obtuse lyrics.
Yeah.
Because I do love storytelling. I do love that kind of music, absolutely. But just sometimes it doesn't sit with then where it goes to for me.
There's like, there's a fan of hers that's got a full body tattoo of all of her albums, lyrics, pictures of her.
That's full on. Imagine being Taylor Swift.
Imagine having someone do a tattoo of you. You would have that.
Yeah, I have that a bit, yeah.
You have people getting your face tattooed on them.
Yeah, but most of them are like, I feel like most of them are like the kinds of people.
Oh, that's not, I'm not suggesting that that's psycho. That's quite funny, really.
Yeah, no, I think almost all the Donna tattoos are like, there's other tattoos. It's like they're at the point where they're like, haha, wouldn't this be funny? Yes. And it's just in the mix.
Yeah. No one's first tattoo is of Zach's face.
No.
No.
No one's doing my face first. No one's going, I'm just going to get a picture of Zach's face on my wrist.
That's so fun. I'm getting 2 tattoos in the next week.
Oh, good for you. Great. I want to start getting tattoos.
Yeah, I'm so excited. You're going to get them on your leggies, right?
Yeah. I want to just start with places that I can cover up first. Mm. I want to like build up to.
I'm just getting a couple. I'm getting.
I want to learn my mistakes in a place like you're not seeing under my shorts.
Yeah. I kind of get one a year.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then we'll see what happens. I'll probably stop soon. I don't know. I have a feeling I'm going to end up looking like fucking Harry Styles because all his tattoos are just so fucking whack and out of place. But I like that. I don't know.
That's so deliberate though. Of course. I reckon he has like a person that's like... Mm. Does the maths and he's like, yeah, your probably. Next tattoo will be 3 centimetres above your ankle. This will be the perfect distribution of
that's
tattoos.
So funny.
That's not true.
No, well, Adam Levine, like. I don't know who said it. I don't know if it was you, but someone famously said, Adam Levine looks like he walked into a tattoo shop and said, I want tattoos. And he's got like California tattooed on his stomach. And I think Grace Jarvis once tweeted, Adam Levine has California tattooed on his stomach. Imagine if I like came out of a tattoo shop and had Nary Warren tattooed on my tummy.
He's like, it's like he's gone to one tattoo artist and gone, yeah. That's perfect. I can't beat that.
Yeah.
This is my favorite. This is a little Adam Levine meme I'm pulling up. I'm pulling up a meme to show to my friend, which is the least podcasty thing ever.
Great.
This is from Dara Faye. I saw a TikTok of someone saying, well, there you go. This is a chain of credits. I saw a TikTok of someone saying Adam Levine looks like a Chipotle bag and I can't stop thinking about it. And I'll show you a picture of the Chipotle bag. Like fun little illustrations.
It's so funny.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Zach, do you have any final thoughts about episode 4?
Yeah, I thought it was really beautiful, really powerful. I like this show more when it goes with the visual and it goes with the big ideas and it just sort of embraces how big this concept is and doesn't try to distill it, just goes for it. And this episode is a really great example of that.
Absolutely. It might be my favourite episode so far.
Yeah.
Which is funny because last week I said episode 3 was my favourite, but I think this one's my new favourite. Just keeps getting better and better. I'm going to give it 1.5 Leguizamos. Yeah. There was no Leguizamo-y. But like, and also I can't see where he would have slipped in. I think if he had been in this episode or a part of his story was in this episode, I think it may have taken away from the episode a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I'm going to give it 1.5 because he wasn't there.
Yeah.
That's worth the 1.5 in itself.
Yeah, no, I'm going to give it 1.5 as well
mm-hmm.
because it was like, yeah, because it was like a breath.
Yeah.
But the breath is still part of the whole.
Yeah.
You know, it's not zero John Leguizamo's because, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to Leguizamorama this week. What an ep. Hey, you know what? Let us know what your favorite Taylor Swift song is. Instagram. Mine is Coney Island currently. I really like that song.
Mine is probably still Shake It Off. What a great pure piece of pop.
Pure piece of pop.
Although I haven't listened to her Folklore album and I think I would like that.
Oh, you would like that. That's my favourite album.
Yeah, it's folky and stuff.
Tom, can you take us away with someone on YouTube doing a cover of Shake It Off? That's what I would like, please. Thank you.